Storie libere presents.
I could say I knew it. I could say I felt it coming. I could say I was hoping for it, that I had been looking for him, that I had desired him, but the truth is, that's not how it went. I had not been looking for that child, the most famous one, the most talked about. Of course I knew who he was. I'd done a small search online, but nothing that would take me to him. And then, who knows what happened and how he was. I had gauged from some stories that his life had been perhaps the most extreme and rebel of all. To tell the truth, I was also afraid of finding out what might have happened to that child, Siddhartha. Not just one of Osho's children, but the one. Siddhartha the golden boy. Siddhartha the greatest of all. The one Camilla mentions to remind us that there were children of all ages, from the little ones to the older ones, like Siddhartha, who is already about 9 years old when she arrives in India. For me, Soli ended with Bindu. It had gone full circle, as I had said. But no, because you can never go full circle when you're dealing with other people's lives. When Siddhartha contacted me on Facebook, he did it with his real name. That's why I didn't open the message straight away. I then clicked on his profile, and the first photo I saw was the one in black and white, where Osho delicately lays one hand on his head and the other under the chin of this child, who, with his tunic and his long hair, was looking at the sky, almost contemplating, hands raised and eyes closed, like a little Jesus Christ. In his message, Siddhartha told me who he was, and that perhaps I would be tired and saturated with listening to these stories. I wasn't. And above all, I knew that this one was a whole different story. I am Roberta Lippi, and you're listening to a new episode of Soli, a journey into the stories and memories of children who grew up in Osho's commune between the beginning of the 70s and the first half of the 80s. The story you're about to listen to is like no other. Because if it's true that all children are special and each story we've collected here on Soli has been precious and important, there's one that takes off from completely different grounds. Osho himself decided so. Little John is 3 years old when he arrives in front of that man, and he already knows he's facing a master. Perhaps this is why, on the day of his sannyas baptism, Osho seems to recognize in that child someone he's known his whole life.
I remember glimpses of me coming up to him and sitting down, just, you know, in like a half lotus. Because I had practiced, I lived in the mountains before with my parents, and we had a master, his name was Babaji. He was very famous, Hadrikan Baba. And he was into yoga and meditation, and he gave me a little carpet and he taught me how to sit up straight and cross my legs. So by the time I met Osho, I knew that. And when I saw Osho, I knew he was a guru and a master. So I automatically did that. And I remember that. I remember him smiling at me. I remember Vivek. I remember even there was a certain period of time when he was talking to some other people. By that time, I was already behind his chair with Vivek playing and stuff. And he even told us to be quiet. So I remember things like that. But I don't remember when he gave me my name. And I don't remember when he explained the meaning of my name. Basically, when he saw me, he seemed that he had recognized me, he said. So he gave me the name Siddhartha, which means the one who has come back or arrived. Anyway, but it was special. I definitely remember seeing him and sitting in front of him. And it was amazing. I really, we had an instant connection.
The connection was so intense that Osho himself remembers that moment years later in one of his readings when he's gone back to India for the second time.
Every Zen master behaves spontaneously. When it is hot, he goes into the shade of a bamboo forest. When it is cold, he burns wood. Zen is absolutely natural. You should function according to your nature. And out of your spontaneity should come your response. The day after the burning of the statue, Tanka Tenen went to see Nanyo, who had once been a disciple of Ino and was the emperor's Zen master. When Tanka unrolled his Zazen rug, Nanyo said, "There's no need." That reminds me little Siddhartha. When he first came, many, many years ago, he was a small child, very small, maybe 3 years old or 4 years old. I can see exactly the moment he came to me. He had brought a small rug, and he came as if he was a grown-up. Manisha, perhaps, will remember. She was present. He unrolled the rug like the Zen disciples do, and he touched my feet. All those who were present started laughing. This little boy was doing a real thing, which is not expected from such a little boy. He touched my feet with great gratefulness, with grace, and then sat down on his rug. That's why I gave him the name Siddhartha. Siddhartha was Gautama Buddha's name, given by his father. It is as beautiful as Buddha. It means one who has arrived. Siddhartha, one who has found the meaning, one who has found the significance of existence.
From Osho's words, we understand immediately why Siddhartha has been considered the golden boy from the whole sannyasin community soon after his arrival. But how did he get there?
I think from what I know, it started from my parents for two reasons. My father was a little older than my mother. He was a very accomplished stylist, hairstylist and photographer. He worked in art, photo shoots, and also for publicity. And he had his own hair salon in Geneva. And he was, you know, quite a successful person in that whole kind of life. And he met my mom while he was cutting her hair, basically. And she was a lot younger. And they got along, they fell in love. He had health problems. You know, I think it had to do with that generation of the Second World War. And he had to hide from the Nazis in caves for weeks on end without food and stuff. So he wasn't so good health-wise, and he was into alternative, you know, food, macrobiotic food. And so was my mom, and they were both into yoga. And, you know, they were already looking for something else. When they had me, by the time they had me, they were decided that they didn't want to bring me up in Switzerland. So they decided to go to India. And we traveled around India for a few years. They were doing yoga and getting into, you know, Hindu scriptures and meditation and things like that. Then we went back. We left India before I was three. And my grandmother, during that same time, had already taken sannyas. And she invited me, my mother and father, to come back to India with her so we could meet Osho. And so that was how it came about.
And so little Siddhartha becomes effectively a sannyasin, a special one, as we've seen, a child everyone considers different, touched by the grace of divinity, thanks to his closeness to Osho, who creates a unique bond with the little one. But did Siddhartha himself feel so special?
A As far as the special treatment, I think for Osho, I don't think it was special treatment. And I think that Osho had two sides to him. One was the master or the guru and the head of his whole, you know, philosophy and movement and his teachings. And the other thing was his personal life. And I think at the beginning for him, his relationship with me was more personal. I would come to see him. We'd walk around in his garden. It was really simple. And it was, of course, I already felt, you know, butterflies in my stomach when I was in his presence when I was that young, you know. You can obviously tell that I'm definitely a fan of Osho. So in that sense, I don't think it was a special treatment. As I grew older and he would start saying anecdotes about me in discourses, which were later also put into the books of the, you know, transcribed books, then it became more of a game. Then I became a bit more of a, I guess, like a iconic figure in the ashram. Then it got a bit more complicated because I was growing up. I realized that I got a lot of attention from people. But the more I would get identified with that attention, the less Osho would contact me. And the more I would forget about it because, you know, somehow, you know, that's just, you know, this ego thing wasn't healthy anyway. As soon as I would just get bored of that whole thing, then he would call me in, you know. And so I always learned lessons as far as humility too, in a way, as far as he was concerned. You know, he didn't ever treat me like I was special either when we were together. It was very natural and normal. So, but it was a double-edged sword as far as the attention from many of the disciples, you know. And then sometimes I felt like maybe it did separate me from my potential friends in a way. Sometimes it made other kids, I felt a little bit uncomfortable with me because I wasn't normal, because I was getting even attention from their parents and from all directions, and they just wanted to play, you know. So yeah, it had, you know, as far as socially, it was a difficult, but for me, it was very fulfilling to have had the honor to have been so close to him too. So overall, it was a gift. Yes.
As we've come to understand, in Pune, the children knew where their parents were, but in truth, they hung out with all adults in the commune. Indeed, those adults would keep an eye on them in turns, even though the children would easily escape their control. Because if everyone controls everyone, nobody controls anybody. Things, however, are different for Siddhartha. He was a different child. The eyes that lay upon him were those of interest and devotion, because he was the child that Osho considered an ancient soul. How did he feel about the relationship with his parents in India?
Me and my parents were very close, from when I was in my mother's womb all the way up to I was born until I was three. That was when we were still a family unit. Right after we all were given sannyas by Osho, my parents, they separated. And that was quite a dramatic episode. And then by the time they had separated, my father left because, you know, he needed to go away in order to be able to let the breakup actually happen, because he was driving my mother crazy. So all of a sudden, right away, my dad was kind of out of the picture. He would come in and out. And with my mom, I think because of the support that you had in the ashram and because of the fact that I was also close to Osho, she could relax a lot and, you know, get into Osho's work and his teachings. And so we distanced a little bit from, around maybe four in reality. Not in a bad way or in an abusive way, but we did distance quite a lot. So I didn't see my mom during the commune days. We had she was my mother, and I really love her now, and I loved her then, and I appreciate her as a mother, but we had more of a contact, almost as if we were both two disciples, you know, like we were brother and sister. It was a bit more like that. And of course, when I needed her to act as a mother in extreme situations, she was there. But besides that, it was kind of a casual relationship. It's funny, and sometimes I wouldn't see her for quite a while, but I was very independent and hard to control. Also, as I was getting sick of pressure and attention from everybody because of my connection with Osho, I became more rebellious and tried to be out of the ashram as much as I could sometimes. So I would, you know, disappear from her. And it was hard for her to catch up to me. So we didn't have that much contact. I have friends who had more contact with their parents, just because their parents made this effort to kind of maintain two worlds. And when, you know, being the mother with the kid, and therefore their kids also didn't have some, they weren't so much part of the actual whole sannyasin thing. In my case, I was thrust into the whole thing, almost as an adult. So, you know, even though I was a kid, my mother, when she decided to become a sannyasin, she just went all in. And so it was, in our case, a bit more extreme.
Siddhartha's mother went all in, like many others, as we know. By now, thanks to all the stories we've been told, it's easy to imagine escapes from the ashram, which for little Sid were even more necessary to get some air from all the attention he felt on him. It was something different from a parent's glance, more of a sort of silent referentiality, hard for a child to grasp. That's how I imagine little Siddhartha sneaking away, joining those famous escapades, trying to conquer his own little world made of the ice lollies Camilla had, or the Indians outside of the ashram taking care of Bindu, or even the cinema where Venu wanted to run away to, and for which, as Osho himself remembers, Siddhartha would even collect the money.
He was such a lovely child, his mother reported to me. It is very difficult to find where he is, because he goes with everybody. He has such a great friendship with all the sannyasins. And he was just a little child. He used to ask anybody, just give me 10 rupees. I am going to see the movie. And it was not only one-sided. If somebody was in need of money, he would bring the money from others and give it to the person, saying, keep it, but remember, whenever I need it, pay whenever you can. So people used to ask Siddhartha, can you manage 20 rupees? He would immediately go. He had the whole commune as his friends, and nobody could refuse him. He was so lovely, so innocent.
Nobody except one. Guess who it could be? Yes, exactly her, Sheila. But before we talk about her, I want to quickly tell you the story of another woman, the one who came before her, or else the one she cleverly took over from, Ma Yoga Lakshmi. Lakshmi has been the very first Osho's disciple. She was responsible for the creation of the ashram in Pune, which started in 1974 with only 7 followers. Osho trusted her blindly because, aside from being completely devoted to him and of good character, she had been very good in managing the first Rajneesh publications. She identified Sheila as a valid assistant because she had quickly transitioned from sewing to establishing the ashram's bank, where she would exchange the foreign currency of the many followers arriving from all over the world. For this reason, when Lakshmi has to travel around India to look for a new ashram for Osho and starts suffering from several allergies, she hands over the reins of Pune to her new young secretary, who, as history teaches us, will quickly know how to get rid of her. Siddhartha too is a problem for Sheila. So much so that she decides to make his life miserable. But why?
I mean, I don't know. I can only imagine why. I mean, I know from the day I met her that she didn't like me. And it all started when basically she overtook the ashram. She was Lakshmi's assistant. Lakshmi was the first secretary of Osho and administrator of the ashram in Pune. And, you know, the Indian community, as far as social circles in India in general, maybe it's similar to more of, you know, Latin countries or Spain or even Italy, where, you know, in the community, in a town, everybody basically knows each other. Lots of Osho's first, you know, more affluent Indian disciples all had a common language, socially speaking. And, you know, they all knew each other's fathers, uncles, brothers or sisters or things like that. So when Sheila came to Pune, I think Lakshmi already knew, you know, her parents and her brother and stuff like that. So there was a familiarity there. And she had a thing that she, you know, she'd also studied in the States. So she was quite affluent with English. And, you know, she had been out of India as well. So she was a good assistant to have. And Lakshmi adopted her as her assistant. And Sheila became very ambitious. And as Osho was looking, before he decided to go to the States, he was looking for a new ashram in India, in the mountains, in the Himalayas, where he thought the air would be cleaner. And he sent Lakshmi to do that job. And while Lakshmi was looking for a new ashram for Osho, Sheila took her job and became very identified with the privilege of that position right away, and started befriending all of the people who were head of the departments, all of the mamas, and basically convinced them to complain, to sign a petition complaining about Lakshmi, saying that she was an ambitious, power-hungry, nasty woman, and that all of the head mamas in the ashram were really sick of working with her and that they preferred to work with Sheila. And when Osho was presented things, he didn't ask many questions. He let things kind of happen in their own synchronicity, for good or for bad. And so when Lakshmi came back, basically he told Lakshmi that Sheila had taken her place permanently. And the day it was official, of course, Lakshmi, her feelings were very hurt, and she was a beautiful, one of the most amazing people I've ever met in my life. She was a true believer in his work and disciple of him in the most humble way. So she wasn't full of herself because she had the privilege of being so close with Osho. But anyway, so the first day Sheila got into office officially, she had M&Ms and she invited all the kids to come so she could get to know us. And as soon as she was giving M&Ms to everybody, and as soon as she saw me, she said, "Ah, you're Siddhartha." And she said, "Oh, no more M&Ms, sorry." And then she looked at me and she said, "I have my eye on you. I know you think you're special, but you're not." That was the first thing she ever said to me. So our relationship started off very rocky, and she ended up kicking me out of Pune 1, of the ashram.
Sheila's objective then is to throw out Siddhartha, get him out of the way. She will try repeatedly during little Sid's whole life. It doesn't matter if he'll always find the way to get back, she will be there waiting for him. Sheila is definitely a nightmare, but a recurring one.
And when I finally got to the ranch, she was also very, very hard on me in every way she could be. She treated me, when she had confrontations with me, she treated me as if I was an adult, as far as her aggression and stuff. And, you know, she just did lots of psychological and emotional manipulations with me to always keep me really nervous. And she kept me quite isolated. She didn't want me to have contact with Osho and or contact with my friends or contact with anybody who was arriving, because she had me bugged. She heard what I would say about her. So she also hated me more so on the ranch. So it was terrible.
It goes without saying that Sheila couldn't stand Siddhartha, and to get rid of him, she often asks for the help and support of the mothers. Those same mothers we've come to know and who failed at their own parenting. The mothers weren't one of Sheila's inventions. She had put them into power, but as Siddhartha reminded us, they were there before her arrival. Osho had wanted them and had given them that name. Bhagwan wanted women to have an important role in the commune. On one hand, because he saw them as less predisposed to the abuse of power. On the other hand, because he wanted to pay them back for years of submission. And so, he gave them central roles of management and coordination. I ask Siddhartha if he wants to tell me any anecdote on what he has had to endure from Sheila and the mothers, and as he speaks, I get lost in his words between Pune and Rajneeshpuram.
Oh, yeah, one morning I overslept, and at that time I was on the work program because I didn't want to study. So the kids could choose. You could either go to the school or you could do a work program, and you had like a sponsor, and it was, for me, that was much more interesting because Osho's disciples were so diverse and had all these lives before they came to him. You know, you had amazing carpenters and bakers and musicians and artists and designers and, you know, lawyers and all kinds of stuff. So it was interesting to work with people. So anyway, I had stayed up late with some friends the night before, and I didn't make it to work. And somebody in the bakery, because I was into baking, was told to always report any time I wouldn't come on time. And I woke up in the actual police, because we had our own police, official police who had trained in normal police school and everything, came and they arrested me. They put me in handcuffs and they took me to see Sheila. I was still really tired. And I remember I got grilled for about 5 or 6 hours, Sheila, and then Vidya would come in and say, oh, what's this? Oh, it's Siddhartha again. Oh, that loser, that, you know, ungrateful little boy who thinks he's so special. What did he do now? You know, things like that. And they would like kind of interrogate me and question me, for instance, and like make me think that they were going to kick me out. And then they would make me, you know, promise and cry and all this stuff and beg to stay. And so that happened on many occasions. She had all of my friends spying on me and reporting on everything I did as well. But one moment she isolated me and she put me with the younger kids who were all like 3 or 4 in the kindergarten. The only thing she didn't do was put diapers on me. You know, she just basically always did things to humiliate me and make me feel bad about myself. And it worked. She was really good at that. She was a very sarcastic, nasty person when she wanted to be. And then she had another side, which seemed really sweet to people. It was kind of like sugar on shit, kind of, you know? She was a heavy lady. So they're not really anecdotes because they were intense. There's some other stuff I would rather not talk about. And then it got all the way up to the point where she actually also kicked me out again from the ranch. And when she did it that time, she made a big spectacle out of it. And she did it with all the mamas who were present. And I was also handcuffed and I was made to sit on a chair for, I think it was at least 12 hours. And it was, okay, you can stay. No, you have to go. You're bad. We don't believe that you really want to stay and you love Osho and that you're going to change. And then prove it, and then I didn't know how to prove it, and it was this ongoing thing, and I was scared shitless, because they, by that time, these women thought they were so special. They were so full of themselves. Osho was so isolated that they felt that they were mini Oshos, because people identified with them as the filter between them and Osho, you know? So it was like they looked at them as they were these goddesses, and they were these perras prepotentes, así, olvídate, unas brujas, terrible, nunca he visto algo así en mi vida, así tan prepotente y con tanto, tanto odio en su cara, y it's almost as if they felt like they were replacing Osho, and at the same time, you know, they didn't even really like him, you know, they were just there for themselves, so it was scary. They were very scary women, and they did really heavy stuff there, you know. So, yeah, that's what I can say.
It's incredible and perhaps worrying how none of the things Siddhartha is telling me come as a surprise. In Spanish, he calls them witches. He says he's never met such overbearing people with such hate on their faces. But how did it go? What happened to him after Sheila had kicked him out of Pune's ashram? Osho had noticed something. Did he care? Was he told just any story? Who knows? Synchronicity, perhaps, as it was for Lakshmi.
Well, because I was kicked out of Pune One, I left with Bhadra, my mother's youngest sister, who was also a sannyasin. By that time, she was about 19. She had a little bit of an inheritance. My mother wanted to stay in Pune. Me and my aunt, we left. We went to Spain. We traveled around Europe a little bit. We were going to sail around the world, but those plans kind of disappeared. And we ended up at my grandmother's in New York. She didn't have enough money to take care of me. The ranch was just starting. And I had been already away for a few months. I hadn't had any contact with, you know, sannyasins in general and stuff like that. She decided to go alone to the ranch. At that time, people were going with tents. There was nothing really built yet even. I stayed with my grandmother for about 6 months. And it was probably the most, it was intense for me. I had never lived in the normal real world. I had never met kids who weren't more alternative or Indian. So, you know, for me, it was quite shock. There was a big culture shock. I was very surprised on normal kids seemed to be so much more close-minded than kids I was used to. My childhood was, you know, I didn't have shoes. My hair was long. I said, not that I didn't have shoes, but I didn't wear shoes. I was a wild kid, like many of my friends. We were like little mini Mowglis, you know. And we were very independent, and we had lots of freedom of expression as well. So it was intense to meet kids who were more conventional. I never really got along with them. I felt really out of place. So I basically, it was when cable TV just came out, MTV and stuff like that. So I kind of hid in the world of TV. And thanks to that, I could understand how America worked a little bit. But it was quite traumatic, and all I wanted to do was get to the ranch. And then when I finally got there, 6 months later, when I got there, my grandmother brought me to the airport. Then, you know, when you're a kid, there's, you know, a stewardess picks you up and takes you on the plane, and they take care of you, and it's all exciting and stuff. And then I got to the ranch, and it was basically desert full of tents and lots of buses coming in and out because it was the first annual festival of the ranch. So people were coming from all over the world. It was very exciting. But it looked very strange. It was just, it was very surreal. I remember it took me about, once I had arrived, I don't know, like 3 or 4 hours even to find my mom, because they didn't let her come to get me even. That's how everybody was so busy. And it was surreal. It was great to see friends again. But I could tell already it was going to be really different. And of course, the second day I was there, Sheila called me in and said that I was never going to be given permanent residency, because I would always be on like a, what's it called, like a tryout, like on standby. If I fucked up at all, I was out. So, you know, that was my arrival. You know, it was amazing, but it was scary. It was different than I thought. Lots of the friends that I thought were going to be there weren't there. It was a lot more American than I could have ever imagined it being before that moment. Because we're in the States, and, you know, lots of Europeans didn't maybe have the means to come there. And it was the time for the American sannyasins to come to there. And it was full of Americans, and it was just a very different vibe. So it was different. It was surreal, strange, exciting, a little depressing, all at the same time.
At least at that time, little Siddhartha was going back to his community. Unlike the other children who arrived in Rajneeshpuram only a few times a year, he had spared himself exile in Medina.
I have lots of my closest friends were Medina kids. You had the ranch kids, and during that time, the ranch kids and the Medina kids. Lots of my friends were Medina kids. I know some of them had really hard times. I can't speak about that, but I don't know much. I know Pooja, who ran it, was the same as all the mamas on the ranch. So it must have been intense, just like the ranch. But I'm sure, you know, I also heard a lot of great stories from my friends. So I've heard mixed things, and none of what I heard surprised me, good or bad. But I don't know much about Medina.
Today, knowing Siddhartha's story, I wonder if Medina with all its flaws and dark sides, could have possibly represented a salvation for little Sid, who's, however, just arrived in Rajneeshpuram and doesn't know yet that Osho is no longer the master who would stroll with him in the garden. He's now locked himself in silence and speaks only through his spokeswoman, the witch who wants to devour Sid, just like in a bad fairy tale, and who will soon push him away from the commune again.
She also kicked me out of the ranch. And she always used my mother and manipulated her when she did it. So my mom always felt like she had to stay and kind of represent our family. Otherwise, my whole family was so rebellious that my mom wanted to be the one person to kind of stay, you know? And Sheila took advantage of that. But she was a very nasty woman also with other people. More so in many cases with other people. I was a well-known sannyasin, so she couldn't do too much to me, you know? But it was hard. I definitely suffered from Sheila.
When Sheila kicks Siddhartha away from Rajneeshpuram, he's just turned 12. This decision will condemn him to a complete different life from the one he had imagined so far. Siddhartha is alone, sent away from his own community for the second time, in a country he doesn't understand yet, without the support of his mother, who asks him if he wants her to go with him, but who in the end stays because Siddhartha tells her so. She stays to prove her devotion to the master, to clean up the family shame that Sheila wants to throw over her, as she had tried to do with little Camilla when she went to see her in Medina. With the difference that Camilla knew that by playing the part, she could have jumped on a plane and landed in the arms of her family. Siddhartha couldn't. He's at the gates of a desert. He's only 12, and he has to do everything on his own. I'm Roberta Lippi, and I'll be here for the second part of this episode of Soli on storielibere.fm. The international voice of Roberta Lippi is Cecilia Gragnani.
Storie Libere Production by Gianandrea Cerone and Rossana De Michele. Editorial Supervisor Guido Guenci and Chiara Tagliaferri. Post and Sound Design Era Zero.